morning. Let's see, we're down to the last hearty few here. Thanks for coming. You'll have seen there's been a slight postponement of the assignment deadline. Hopefully most of you are wrapping it up anyway, but if you need a little extra time, you have till next Tuesday. Okay. Anything further than that, I'll want some sort of documented evidence why you couldn't have been working on it for the last 6 weeks. Okay, so last time we did a quick survey of 3G cellular networks, and again the idea here is that packets take a more central role and the data rates increase, and we saw that this was primarily achieved through new air interfaces and operation in a separate part of the radio spectrum, although it could, you could come pretty close or you can get there sort of developing off of GSM. Okay, and so we looked at sort of the step from 2G to 3G in a sort of evolutionary fashion. We are going to continue that today with 4G networks, and 4G networks, you know, the focus is all about packets now, and again, we want to increase data rates. Okay. So, 4G standardization is again presided over by the ITU, and so we had the 3G specification of IMTS, the 4G specification is IMTS Advanced. Okay. And again, the main objective is to increase data rates, have IP-based networks, have more interoperability with sort of between various networks and indeed various network standards, not just telecom standards, but sort of all radio standards. And to provide attach some importance to quality of service, so that again you can support all these new and shiny data applications. Okay. And what we'll see is that there's two main technologies which are underlying these improvements, the improvements in data rates. And those are orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, which replaces the CDMA techniques we saw as the prime example of 3G. And we'll go into those in not a whole pile of detail, but some detail. And then MIMO, multiple input, multiple outputs, also called smart antenna technology. So what can you do with, if you sort of have multiple antennas at either the sender or the receiver? Okay. And we'll see that we can either improve the quality of the signal, or again, we can further subdivide the spectrum into more channels. Error correction sort of also is important, again, in terms of correcting errors, and those techniques improve as we go along. And So scheduling, again, is done now to support quality of service. So you have ideas of priority and allocations and link allocations. And modulation now adapts to channel conditions. Okay, so if you have better channel conditions, you seek to send at higher data rates. If you have worse channel conditions, you drop back and send at lower data rates as, you know, through the modulation schemes and sort of how many bits you get per symbol. Okay. So, in terms of evolution, what we saw was for 3G, we had two offerings. We had 3GPP proposed UMTS, and then 3GPP2 proposed CDMA in 2000, both for CDMA-based technologies, more or less. Okay. 3GPP, you know, again, sought to evolve UMTS into a 4G standard, and the name for that was LTE, or long-term evolution. And again, it adopted new transmission technologies in OFDMA and MIMO. And so the architecture also evolved, again, to put packets more at the core, or to become completely packet-driven, and to offer quality of service. 3GPP2 started along the road of evolving CDMA 2000. At some point, not too long ago, this got dropped in favor of LTE as well. So LTE is the current evolutionary path for 4G. LTE does not completely meet the 4G standards. So moving on from LTE, we have LTE Advanced, which is the 3GPP proposal for a 4G standard. And it is certified by ITU as being IMTS Advanced compliant. LTE is not the only IMTS Advanced compliant standard. There's a second standard, 802.16m wireless MAN advanced standard, and this is the evolution of the WiMAX standard. Okay. As you'll see, it's part of that 802 family, so it comes from, again, the networking side of things with the goal of providing point-to-point connectivity. The main reason I tossed it in here, and we'll have a discussion of WiMAX, is that WiMAX is actually the first place where you saw technologies like MIMO and OFDM being implemented. Okay. And 802.16m has also been certified as a competing 4G standard. So what we'll look at today, and again, in reasonably high level, I just want you guys to get a feel for, again, how these technologies work and how they all fit into the, sort of, again, the networking world. We'll have a look at these two core technologies of OFDM and MIMO. MIMO in particular, it's complex, and so I'm pretty much going to say what it does, not really how it does it. Okay, you could spend another course going into how exactly you do signal processing to actually achieve MIMO. Okay. And then, again, we'll look at some of these major features of these two competing 4G standards, LTE, LTE Advanced, and then WiMAX evolving to wireless MAN. Okay. So, OFDM stands for Orthogonal Frequency Division Multiplexing. And again, it's another, you can view it as a modulation technique. It's another way of transmitting signals and sort of subdividing the frequency domain into separate channels. Okay. And so you can, in the initial view we can take of it is that it's a spread spectrum technique. It's spreading the signal over a larger portion of the frequency spectrum. And the way it does this is it takes a high bitrate stream and it breaks it up into a number of lower bitrate streams. So you can think of splitting, a stream at one bitrate. Well, you could split it up into two at half the bitrate, four at a quarter of the bitrate, etc. Okay. And then each stream is going to be modulated onto a separate carrier frequency. We'll see in a moment how that modulation is accomplished. And so we do have now risks of inter-symbol interference, so we have to ensure that the delay is smaller than the fraction of the symbol duration. Okay. And so this becomes easier if our bit rate is lower. Okay. So what does the modulation look like? And what we do here is that we actually allow the signals from the different channels to overlap, but we do it in sort of a clever way. So we say that they're orthogonal to each other, and the orthogonality comes from the peak of one signal corresponds to the zero crossing of the remaining signals, so that at any point you're going to be able to distinguish between each of these peaks, while at the same time sort of allowing them to overlap significantly. Okay. And so ideally this orthogonality allows us to recover our initial signal without distortion from the other signals. And again, we can pack these carriers in because, again, of the orthogonality, one is not now interfering with another. Okay, so where does this all come from? And so, if we look, what we consider here is the Fourier transform of a pulse. Okay, so you're transmitting just a pulse between over a certain period, and what that gives you is this sync period. this sync function. Okay, so this is the function we have with a peak and then zero crossings at points, at multiples of pi over t. Okay. Now, what we can do is, again, shift that impulse, or modulate it by a single tone at a single frequency. And what that does is, again, in the frequency domain, it shifts the peak along. Okay. And so, if we then relate the frequency to the period of this pulse, then we get shifts, which again are going to correspond with the dips in our signal. Okay. So what we want is our frequency is some multiple of 1 over the period of our pulse. And if we do that, again, we rearrange in the frequency domain of these signals so that the peak of one signal is the zero crossing of another, so there's the signals are not interfering with each other. Okay. So, again, what we can work out from that is that we can recover our initial signals. Okay. And so here we essentially have this sum of cosines, and to recover the signal, again, we would apply the cosine again, and what we see is that for the same frequency we'll recover our signal, and for everything else we'll get our zero. Okay. So again, just as benefits, this makes quite efficient use of the spectrum that were allocated, and it removes interference between channels. Okay. From an implementation point of view, this is rather handy. Again, I'm not going to go into the details of how it works, but we have a Fourier, the frequency representation, again, uses a finite number of Fourier coefficients. And because of that, we can code it using fast Fourier transforms. And fast Fourier transforms are good because we can implement them easily in hardware. So not only does this use the spectrum efficiently, it's also relatively straightforward to implement. Okay. Now, we have removed interference between channels sort of over at the same point in time. We still have to consider the effects of multipath on our system because we can get inter-symbol interference. Okay, so two consecutive symbols could interfere with each other. In order to avoid this, some guard period within the form of a prefix, is added to the symbol. Okay. And so, essentially, you've lengthened the period slightly to overcome inter-symbol interference. Okay, and so just to use, just sort of to look at an example, if we have a 1,000-term system with a data stream, and the data stream at a rate of 1 megabit per second, so the bit duration is 1 microsecond, I think it's actually supposed to be a 100-term system. So we get 100. No, should be 1,000 data streams then. So we have a megabit. We can convert that to 1,000 kilobit streams. So the bit duration is now 1 microsecond. We add 1/8 of the symbol duration as a guard time, so that's 125 microseconds now. And so what we need is that the multipath spreading time is less than the guard time. And so if we think about signal travels at 3 × 10⁸ meters per second, we end up with, you can have 37.5 kilometers between the path lengths. Okay. So by adding that time, you can get fair resistance to multipath effects. Okay, so essentially what we've done now is we've divided our system up into a number of channels. These channels do not interfere with each other. And our first proposed use of this is to transmit a single data stream. Okay. And so we can see that if we transmit the data stream in this way, we've essentially introduced a spread spectrum technique. And so the stream should have a greater resistance to errors and channel quality. Now, since we do have these separate subchannels, there's no reason that we also can't assign the different subchannels to different users. Okay. And so in this way, we can use OFDM as a multiple access technique. And so OFDMA stands for orthogonal frequency division multiple access. And it allows multiple users to share the spectrum. Obviously, so you know the users are only getting, again, portions of the overall bitrate, but again, that they can use the spectrum without interfering with each other now. Okay, so that's the basic idea of OFDM. And again, it's a technique which makes fairly efficient use of your frequency spectrum. So that's one of the technologies that's used to deliver higher bit rates, and increased spectral, well, I should say increased spectral efficiency. How you use that is, again, up to you. The second technique is MIMO. MIMO stands for multiple input, multiple output, and it's a radio communications technology whereby multiple antennas at the transmitter and or receiver are used to improve communications performance. And input and output actually refers not specifically to the antennas, but to the channels produced between antennas. Okay. Now, MIMO now relies on multipath. So the idea is that if you put, again, antennas at even slightly different places, then the path by which they arrive, the path by which the signal arrives at the different antennas differs. Okay. And again, very clever use of signal processing, you can sort of interpret between those different paths. Okay. Again, we're not going to really go into sort of the nuts and bolts of how that happens. Just, you know, let's assume that it can be done. And again, it's frequently used in conjunction with OFDMA. Okay. So, sort of like OFDM, there's two things we can do. We can attempt to improve the quality of a single signal, or we can attempt to sort of again pack more signals in. So we're going to start with, again, this idea of improving a single signal. And we've already sort of touched on all this before, but we summarize it up here. We do that by introducing diversity or redundancy into the system. And there's three basic flavors. We have time diversity, frequency diversity, or space diversity. Okay, so time diversity refers to transmitting a message at a different time with potentially different channel coding. And this is essentially a form of redundancy. So you're adding extra information that you can interpret to fix your signal. Okay. And so we would have, again, seen that in terms of channel coding. Frequency diversity means, again, sending your signal along different through different portions of the frequency spectrum. And that's your spread spectrum techniques. Do that. And the final one, space diversity, allows you to use antennas in different positions to take advantage of the different characteristics of the different radio paths that pop up. And again, MIMO is going to be based on space diversity. So you've got multiple antennas and therefore different paths, therefore we'll see what we can do with the different characteristics of those paths. Okay, now, as I said just now, there's really two things we can use. We can attempt to improve the quality of a single signal. Okay, so we transmit the same data through a number of different paths, more than one path. And then by knowing maybe the characteristics of these different paths, we have a better idea of what the actual signal was. If one is distorted, and we know it's going to be distorted, we can ignore that in favor of a signal coming in from a different path. And so, again, in order to, it's a complicated affair to actually exploit the state. You have to exploit the state of the paths. You need more information than sort of typically we've had so far. Okay, the other option, again, is that we actually try and send different data along these different paths, and then exploit the knowledge we have of the characteristics of the different paths to interpret that data at the receiver. Okay, and so. Essentially, again, what you're doing there is you've got a channel and you're subdividing that channel and then trying to pull out the relevant bits at the receiver and figure out exactly how that subdivision occurred. Again, it's complicated how that's accomplished, but it's possible. Okay. So, the next thing that leads on to is, well, if you can subdivide channels somehow, then you don't have to send the same user's data on those channels. Two different users can have data transmitting on those channels. Okay. So, if it's complicated, if you think about it, it's slightly less complicated in the downlink direction because we get one person doing the transmissions. In the uplink direction, again, all of the users are going to have to be aware of what's going on in the system. Okay. So, what you can do is going to be obviously be governed by sort of how much hardware you put in it, and just again to think about it just in terms of antennas. The simplest case of, you know, again, is what we've been thinking of up till now, if we start like that MIMO, is single input, single output. And so this is just your standard radio link. Okay. And again, the processing is relatively simple, but you know, you don't get the improvements to the signal or to the transmission capacity. Now, the next simplest probably is single input, multiple output. And so this is referred to as receiver diversity and can be used to combat fading. So you send a single signal, but due to the multipath effects, again, if you have two antennas at the receiver, then you receive, the signal will be received over two different paths. Okay. And so you can seek then to improve the quality of signal. Either you take the strongest signal or you take some sort of weighting of all of the signals. Again, it's relatively simple, although you'll need more processing at the receiver and again, throwing more antennas into the handset is sort of a more more complicated affair, just again because of the processing and the hardware. Okay, and then finally you have your full MIMO, which again can have these sort of two different uses of improving the signal quality and inputs, but we now need again additional hardware and additional processing capabilities at both sender and receiver. Okay. So again, we have these two things we might want to do. We might want to improve our signal reception, or we might want to, again, sort of introduce some sort of multiplexing. Space-time coding is one typical way of improving the signal. And in this case, multiple copies of a data stream are transmitted across a number of antennas. And typically both spatial and temporal diversity are introduced. So the different antennas are going to transmit also at the signals at different times. Okay. And so what you're going to need then at the receiver is some way of decoding that transmission. And so what we get is a space-time block code. And here a row is going to represent a time slot. Column represents an antenna, and then SIJ is the actual signal transmitted at in time slot I from antenna J. Okay, and so again, what you'll then do is take that information, and you need to then decode it and determine what you think the actual signal was. Okay. And so you would do that. You would do that over a sort of block of time. Okay. So that's a way of introducing redundancy in order to improve your signal. Again, the other option is to attempt to improve the data rates through the system. And so we have these multiple channels set up, or sub-channels set up, and we can now think to transmit different data over the different sub-channels. Okay, and so what this is going to do is it's going to improve the channel capacity beyond that Shannon limit, and in theory anyway, if you have n input-output pairs, then you can increase that by n. The price you're going to pay for that is you're going to have to actually be able to decode signals from each of these channels. Okay. So what we see is, again, we've got a number of inputs, and N is a number of outputs, and N is and for each transmitted signal, what's going to be received at each of the antennas, and so what you're going to get is essentially N copies of each signal being received at each of the antennas, again, all combined with the other M signals that were transmitted. Okay. And so what we get, we can represent that in a matrix form where the receiver signal is some coefficients H times P, the transmitted signal. Okay. And so what H is it's again going to be the characteristics of the path over which that signal is received. So H11 is the characteristics of the path from one to one, etc. Now, again, what's the question that should pop to mind, which isn't going to be answered, is, well, how do we figure out those path characteristics? It's complicated. What we would like to say is that if we can figure out those path characteristics, we can invert that matrix and recover our transmitted signal. Okay. There's sort of one additional factor to that, which is that, of course, there's noise as well. And so some technique like minimal mean square errors will have to be used to try and recover the signal. Okay. Okay. And so, again, we can see that, again, these two purposes. We either take a single transmission and we improve its quality, or we try and send multiple transmissions. And again, if you're sending multiple transmissions, to some extent, it doesn't matter whether they come from one user or a number of users. And so if we're dividing things up into subchannels, we can allocate those subchannels to multiple users. Okay. Now, again, it's slightly more complicated in the uplink direction, since each individual user is going to need to have the channel information about, again, relating to which subchannel they're transmitting on. Okay. In terms of multiple users, it's a single transmitter, so all of the coding will have to be done, and then, of course, the receiver is going to have to know how to distinguish between the various channels, and the primary technique used here is, or one of the simpler techniques used, is what's called dirty paper coding. And again, you use the properties of the channel interference to code the data, and then you do this in such a way that it's sent along the proper, along the intended channel, then it's, the signal can be distinguished from the interference. If it's sent along other channels, then the signal is not distinguishable from the interference. Okay. Okay. So, again, the main thing I want you to be aware of here is just that, again, these techniques can be used to either improve signal quality or to, again, divide the system up into sub-channels and improve the overall system capacity. And so, obviously, these are both important issues as we again seek higher and higher data rates out of our systems. Now, those two technologies sort of underpin the radio transmission systems for 4G systems. And again, what we'll do to wrap, conclude the course material is just have a look at some of the features of our two 4G candidates, the LTE Advanced, and then the WiMAX following on to 802.11, sorry, I don't know why I keep saying 11, 802.16m standard. Okay, so LTE is, again, an evolution of UMTS into a 4G standard. LTE does not completely satisfy the 4G requirements. LTE Advanced does satisfy the requirements. And as we said, 3GPP handles its standardization in terms of releases. So LTE was specified in release 8 and 9. LTE Advanced is specified in release 10, and then onwards it's are improved. Okay. And again, the main changes that we have for LTE regard the air interface. We move to using OFDM and MIMO. And there's also sort of improvements to the network architecture. Okay. And sort of nothing's ever simple, but arguably the architecture is simplified. We now deal strictly with packet processing. And although there are sort of interfaces for other to allow sort of interaction with other networks. Okay. And so here the E-Node B is your base station, base transmission system. And that connects back to the SAE, which is the system architecture evolution, I believe, yes, and gateway, which is designed for IP packet handling, so it brings your IP packets back to whatever network is necessary then. And then you have a separate mobility management entity, which handles the mobility management for the system. And again, that can interface in your SPSM, sort of older networks. Okay. In terms of channel structure, since we've spent so much time on it, LTE defines the logical, transport, and physical channels in a similar fashion to UMTS. Okay. So you have that sort of, again, you have this intermediate step where the packet data is multiplexed onto a channel, which is then transmitted over an actual physical channel. Again, if you're interested, I've included a reference here. I don't expect you to be able to hold forth for any great length of time on the channel structures for LTE. Okay. LTE, again, uses OFDM combined with QPSK, 16 QAM or 64 QAM. So again, multiple bits per symbol. And the exact strategy used is going to depend on the channel conditions. Now, to gain access to resources, so the OFDM symbols are grouped into resource blocks, and then the user is allocated a number of these resource blocks depending on quality of service negotiations. So essentially, the blocks refer to time slots and frequency slots, time and frequency slots, and then you have an allocation based on your need. Okay. So what we see here is, again, we divide up our world into frequency slots and time slots, and then what we'll see is that, and so that gives you a resource element, and again, depending on what sort of modulation technique you are using, you can pack more or less bits into that resource. Okay, the uplink also uses a form of OFDM. Okay, so in both cases, OFDM is used. Now, again, one of the goals of 4G was to provide quality of service for streaming videos, all these new data applications. And so quality of service is built into LTE, and it's negotiated on the level of a packet flow, so sort of one logical data stream for an application. Okay, so the packet flow is a data flow between our gateway and then the user terminal, but obviously the constraint is the radio resources. Okay. packet flows are essentially divided up into a number of classes, where the class is distinguished by a resource type. So you can have either guaranteed or non-guaranteed bit rates, a priority, packet delay, and packet error rates. Okay. And then admission and scheduling is dependent on your class label. And so, again, for this table, I don't expect you to know the QCI or any of the exact details about any specific application, but again, what you can see is how different applications, again, are going to be categorized differently according to their needs. Okay. So what we also won't say here then is, so we have all these classifications, exactly how resource allocation is based on them is well, we're not going to go into it. So you can also note that the end user can choose to subdivide the packet flow, but they're going to receive their quality of service allocations based on the whole entity. Okay. So again, we'll note that MIMO is being used in both the uplink and downlink directions. And in the downlink for current proposals, that's used for spatial diversity, so to improve the signal quality, not to increase data rates. Okay, both time and frequency division duplexing are allowed. FDD is considered mainly because it's used in the 3G. It was the most popular for the 3G systems, although time division duplexing is considered preferable because of its because it allows you to unpair the spectrum, so it's more flexible. And so you get lower cost hardware, channel characteristics are the same for both uplink and downlink. Again, if you're splitting the frequency, they're going to be frequency dependent. You can have dynamic changes in uplink and downlink capacity, but in any time-based system, you do have the issue of synchronization. So there's trade-offs. Okay. So again, what we see is that LTE made significant changes to the system, and in particular the radio transmission system, in order to move towards the 4G standards, And LTE Advanced is essentially just a further refinements on the basic LTE package. So all the basics that we talked about in LTE are still there in LTE Advanced. Okay. So, again, I'm not going to hold you to any of the details of this. For our purposes, what have we seen already? We've seen, again, we're talking different releases, and we see where we move from CDMA to OFDMA. Okay. And we see the improvements that we want in data rates and latency. So you got a lot of the way with LTE, but further changes were required. One change is carrier bandwidth aggregation. So this allows for multiple channels to be assigned to a single user, and that can be done in either a contiguous or non-contiguous way. And so obviously that's a way of improving your data rates. And if you have two channels, you've doubled your data rates.
There's
a few more techniques that I'll just mention, again, which are designed to improve the sort of quality of signaling. Coordinated multipoint allows for a user sort of who's between cells to communicate with multiple ENODs at a given time, and so this helps to maintain data rates at the edge of a cell. And again, you can think the main issue there is just coordinating the actions of all the different ENODs or base stations. Relaying is another technique that can be used, and now, again, we think of, so far we've thought about the mobile user communicating directly to the base station. Now we can think about having intermediate points, so mini base stations whose function is not to communicate back to the main system, but just to relay the signal to the base station. And so these can be distinguished according to their functionality, but again, the main idea is just that they're forwarding on the data, and so you don't have to, the data doesn't have to be transmitted as far, which can improve again the quality of the channels. Okay, so we'll take a break here. We have one remaining topic, and that's WiMAX. And again, if you own any sort of radio or TV, you've heard all the annoying WiMAX jingles. But so it is, it's a technology that's out there in use. Again, more as a broadband technology than necessarily as a mobile telephony technology. But again, it's a technology where it was the first to adopt RFDM and MIMO, and it is a certified 4G standard. Creative 2.14M is a certified 4G standard as well. So we'll take a break here. When we return, we'll wrap up with the WiMAX, and then I will say some extremely brief words about the exam. You'll see that I have a load of slides. I'm not really going to go into them. You can look at them yourself. I'll just mention a few things about them. Okay, so I'll see you back in about 15 minutes.